I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, my guests discuss neighborhood planning in the West Hancock area, the District 9 commission race, a discrimination complaint filed against an Athens bar, and the opportunity for residents to comment on T-SPLOS projects. All that and much more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. I'm joined by Blake Odd with Flagpole and District 3 Commissioner Melissa Link. And so thank you both for being here. The first thing we have up is the West Hancock neighborhood. And I know we ended last time on this, Blake, and we didn't really get to go into it as much as I think that we would have liked because there's so much going on. And I know it's something that also concerns you, Melissa. You want to tell us a little bit about your concerns regarding the planning?
Well, yeah, this is something I've been concerned about pretty much since before I ran for office. You know, I've realized that the West Hancock neighborhood is changing. You know, for a long time it was a neighborhood in decline that had kind of been neglected, and now it's picking back up. There's a lot more interest from folks moving into that neighborhood, and you know, gentrification is really a thing. Property values are going up, and it became pretty clear about 2 years ago that there was a very large-scale project heading for the Varsity, basically the two square blocks around the Varsity. And it is technically two square blocks because Franklin Street used to cut right through the area, and it picks up on the other side of Broad Street. And, you know, I've been kind of working behind the scenes and meeting with assorted staff and commissioners, you know, to kind of get people aware that this was going on and see if we couldn't get some kind of neighborhood planning process or a moratorium or something, you know, some zoning changes. It's zoned multifamily, which does make it a target for perhaps student housing. But, you know, also being in the Chase Street School District, it is definitely a target for more upper middle class settlement. And, you know, with the West Broad feasibility study having kicked in about a year ago, I was kind of told that, you know, this neighborhood would be part of that and we'll get some recommendations out of that. And there's very little this is a neighborhood in need of further study. In the meantime, myself and Commissioners Jerry Neesmith and Kelly Gertz and Jared Bailey had been reaching out to the realtor who had been collecting the properties for the Gordy family, the folks who own the Varsity, to try and find out what exactly is going on and what their plans are for the neighborhood. They've bought properties that are on a residential street, on Reese Street, historic properties within the National Register Historic District. And we were repeatedly told that there's nothing going on. There were no plans. And then a couple months ago, we were told that they were going to start pulling demolition permits for them. I've tried to get a moratorium support before. I tried to get the moratorium attached to the infill housing ordinance. I feel like the infill housing ordinance puts even more pressure on that neighborhood because being that it's zoned residential, the protections of that infill ordinance don't apply in Hancock. They don't apply in much of East Athens. And also the moratorium that we passed on downtown, on student housing downtown, I feel could put more pressure on it. When we were told about the demolitions, you know, I ramped up those efforts and I couldn't get the support that I knew I would need to have it pass. The mayor intervened, and the attorney declared that it was an improper procedure to attach it to the infill housing ordinance, that it didn't directly relate to that ordinance. So when the demolition permits were filed or were requested a couple of weeks ago, I immediately put the 90-day hold on and immediately started gathering the support to get the moratorium, you know, and there's been neighborhood outreach going on all along. It's not a very organized neighborhood. There are a lot of rental properties, a lot of new homeowners, a lot of very elderly homeowners. But there's a significant group of folks that have been meeting and are interested and, you know, who I'm in regular communication with. And it went pretty smoothly. You know, it was a 9-to-1 vote, and there was a lot of support from the neighborhood. The only opposition were from folks that from the commercial developers, you know, who would like to tear down these very significant historic homes. One home is extremely significant because it was built by a couple born into slavery, and it's a very grand home. They were doing quite well for themselves to have moved into this beautiful two-story Queen Anne-style home. And also it was the home of Miss Annie Burney, who her name is on Burney Harris Middle School. She was extremely important local educator and principal of Athens High and Industrial. This community owes a lot to her and her efforts in African-American education. So to lose that home would be a travesty, in my opinion. So that kind of kicked it off and enabled that moratorium, and we're able to now hit that pause button and initiate a neighborhood planning process that can hopefully address a whole number of issues, not only historic preservation, but perhaps zoning issues, density issues. You know, it's gonna be a difficult process, but hopefully a really good one, and the kind of process that can serve as a model for other neighborhoods, and it's something that's long overdue in this community.
I know, Blake, you were concerned about that home as well.
Yeah, for all the reasons Melissa stated, and kind of taking a more of a 30,000 foot view here, because Melissa did a really good job of kind of explaining really the nuts and bolts of what's going on. But this touches on so many issues that I think really this whole city's been grappling with for a very long time, and one of them is recognizing and preserving our African American history, because we haven't done a very good job, I don't think, of doing that. Most of the historic districts that we have are, you know, historically white neighborhoods. You know, the house museums, we don't have a African American house museum. We have Confederate generals' houses that are museums, but, you know, we don't have a African American house museum that would really kind of show people how, like, you know, that group of people lived in the past, you know, as opposed to just sort of the, you know, the rich and famous, I guess, of the 19th century. So there's that issue, and the whole West Broad neighborhood, Hancock, north and south of Broad Street. It's relatively untouched. I mean, it's been neglected, like Melissa said. You know, there hasn't been a lot of investment in the neighborhood, and it's kind of been in decline, but it's intact, you know, whereas you look at the other big kind of traditionally African-American part of the city in East Athens. I mean, it's just been, like, overrun with new construction, you know, mostly student housing, student rentals, and you're starting to see that already, especially on the east side of Millage. You know, that's already been happening for a long time. You've been seeing a lot of infill development that's mostly student rentals, and has really changed the character of that half of the neighborhood, at least. So we do have an opportunity to kind of save at least part of that tradition, that heritage of our city. And the other issue is gentrification and affordable housing, where this is a working class neighborhood. It's still affordable for most people. Probably the last place within walking distance of downtown where the average person could buy a house. You know, so that's valuable in and of itself. And we've talked so much about how, you know, the middle class is being pushed out of Normaltown, and, you know, the African Americans being pushed out of East Athens, you know, even the upper middle class being pushed out of Five Points by people who are even wealthier. So, and there are two things I think that need to happen here, you know, I mean, other than the preservation aspect. We have to find some way, I think, to, while preserving it, I think we do need to have more density. You know, maybe it doesn't need to be multifamily, but we do need to find a way to add the density because it's desirable and people want to live there. And so if we don't have some kind of development, then that's just going to continue to drive up housing costs, but it needs to be appropriate.
Well, yeah, there's a lot in between, like, you know, a single family home maybe and a huge development. I think
there is
something in between.
There is something in between, but when you're talking about, you know, what could go on the varsity, I mean, you're talking about look at what's across the street. Look at the hotel that's going up, and multiply that times, you know, 10 or 20.
It can go six stories up on a good deal of the Chase Street and Reese Street frontage as well as all of the millage and Broad Street frontage. And you do the math, they could do about 152 bedrooms, not to mention the parking structure that would be required, you know. I believe drive-throughs are gas stations, you know, huge footprint businesses.
That changes a lot.
I mean, it could be like one of those big medical office buildings on Broad.
I mean, it would be very not too different from what we're seeing downtown. The impact would be something like that, because most of our, you know, large scale, like something like, what is that, the Uncommon? You know, you could see a building similar to that on that block, you know, a six-story housing apartment building and then a whole mixed use of other commercial and office and parking lot and parking deck. Yeah. And
it can't be totally student housing because it is CG. It's not downtown. Mm-hmm. I think CG is 24 houses an acre. Is that right? Or
it's, 24 it's units? 24 bedrooms per acre, or maybe.
And downtown's 200.
Yeah, downtown's 200.
But when you think about, you know, 5-6 acre property, yeah, you know, you can get, like you said, whatever, 150 bedrooms. Yeah. But that's on top of, you know, it's not just residential. It's on top of, you know, however many hundreds of thousands of square feet of commercial space.
There's a whole array of commercial uses that could go there.
It would be a very different looking neighborhood.
I mean, a grocery store, you know, which I think a lot of people would appreciate having a grocery store, but, you know, it would just have to be done right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's important that this get done right. And there's no reason why those historic properties couldn't be incorporated into a mixed-use commercial project. I mean, we see what's happening at 100 Prince, where they're incorporating a historic church. You know, it happens over and over again, this adaptive reuse, you know. And I think the real question is, how do we deal with that conflict where we have this commercial growth and our existing single-family neighborhoods? And that's something that we haven't really addressed. It was kind of something that the Prince Avenue Corridor study was supposed to address, and that kind of got shelved, and it's collecting dust at this point. And, you know, even in the West Broad feasibility study, which, you know, we're taping this on a Wednesday afternoon, and it's not going to air till Fridays. But Thursday evening, there is a community meeting and a presentation of the findings of that study. And, you know, I've seen the preview of it and the draft of it, and it doesn't really address those issues. It primarily focuses on the interests of the strategic partners, Athens-Clarke County, the Land Trust, Housing Authority, and the school district. And, you know, the study recommends further study, and I think that's the conversation that we need to have, and hopefully the conversation that will very much be a part of this neighborhood planning process moving forward.
Well, you know, it's like Blake said, it's an intact neighborhood. You know, that's rare.
Right.
So it'd be nice to maintain it as you improve and adapt.
And it seems like we're always just, we, the community, you know, are just always kind of behind the eight ball when it comes to things like this. And, you know, this is a rare opportunity, I think, for us to, for the city, you know, to get, you know, the government and the neighborhood, the residents, everybody, to kind of get out in front of things a little bit for once, you know, before too much damage is done.
Well, Melissa's buying some time.
I wish I could have bought it sooner. You know, I feel like I've been, sometimes I feel like Cassandra screaming that the... that the Greeks are coming to pillage Troy, but you know, it's we've seen it coming. You know, it wasn't a surprise when those demolition requests were pulled, and luckily I had the language ready to hand over because I had been trying for almost 2 years to make it happen.
Well, you bought some time, and you know, for time for people to really think it out, think it through, and, you know, come up with something that could be a good compromise. Because, like we said, there's got to be something in between the giant housing complex, which we can't have there. We can't have a high rise. But six stories is pretty high.
They could do a six-story hotel. They could do offices with, you know, they can go pretty.
And we're talking about, you know, almost entirely one-story buildings around it. You know, so that would really stick out.
So it would really be.
You know, that was probably not. And that corner is a place where there should be some kind of, I think, dense development, some kind of commercial development, because it's a major intersection.
Right.
But
perfect location for
it. You know, six stories to me just seems like it would stick out like a sore thumb.
Well, and think of the traffic that an intense use like that would generate. And already you're seeing a lot of cut-through traffic in that neighborhood. Chase Street and Hancock they're pretty active thoroughfares. And little old Reese Street, this is a narrow, little, quiet neighborhood street, and you park on one side and you're blocking the street. It cannot handle commercial traffic.
Well, we will have you back on to discuss what's happening with it.
We're going to be talking about this, I think, for a while.
Yeah, it's going to be a process.
Right, it's a process. But we also wanted to discuss the District 9 commission race. So that's actually a race.
Well, it's a race, yeah. or it will be soon, but. Kelly Gertz, the commissioner for that district, is running for mayor. I mean, he's been telling people he's running for mayor for months. You know, was in Five Poll a couple of months ago, probably, and more recently in the Banner Herald, you know, him saying he's going to run for mayor. But it's not, I guess it's not official yet. I don't know what he's waiting on, but it's sort of official, non-official. I don't know. Anyway, he's running. So that's going to be an open district. It's Pulaski Heights, Pulaski Street, Newtown, Bethel Homes, kind of runs northeast, you know, up the Danielsville Road area. Lot of diverse neighborhoods, Pine Woods all the way up to the county line. So it's a very, very, very diverse district. So it's gonna be an interesting race for that reason. And Tommy Valentine was the first candidate who's announced for that. He's a PhD student in public administration who ran, if anybody remembers, maybe somebody out there remembers Bobby Saxon, who ran for Congress back in 2008, the Democrat who ran against Paul Brown. And Tommy was a rapper and ended up running Bobby Saxon's campaign. That's how he got his start in politics. Then he kind of pulled back a little bit, then went back to school, and now he's really gotten back into politics with a vengeance here the past couple of years. He's been involved in Athens for Everyone and the anti-discrimination movement, the Clark County Democrats. So he's a young guy, a smart guy, will be a really strong candidate. And then I think Evita Thornton is going to run as well, who's currently on the school board. She's been on the school board, I think, for three terms. So she'll be also a very strong candidate. These are two good choices. And that's all there is so far. But
right. So far.
It's an open seat, so, you know, of course there's going to be multiple people, but that'll be a interesting race to watch. And, you know, it's one of the ones that you feel good about because you really can't go wrong.
Good candidates are in it.
Right.
So everybody can be happy. We also have our first official discrimination complaint against an Athens bar since they passed the ordinance.
Yeah, well, there have been dozens and dozens and dozens, but this is the first official complaint that's been filed based on the new ordinance that the commission passed in November that bans discrimination of bars, requires them to post their door code, you know, post any private events they might be having because, you know, the media, the student government, UGA, the commission, you know, have all received many, many, many anecdotes and stories about bars kind of using these dress codes and private events, air quote, we're having a private event, you can't come in, you know. It kind of is an excuse to keep out minority patrons. So this is the first complaint. It was filed by a gentleman named Kendrick Bullock. And his brother, Broderick Flanagan, who were out downtown and tried to get into a 90s bar. And Mr. Bullock was told that his pants were too saggy and he couldn't come in. But as Broderick pointed out, there actually was no dress code posted at the door, which the law requires you to have that posted.
As opposed to coming up with something.
Right, because if it's not posted, you can just sort of make up anything, and Nobody can tell, you know, well, is it saggy pants really aren't allowed, you know? I mean, that you could just tell anybody anything. So they working with, you know, Broderick's involved with the Athens Anti-Discrimination Movement, which is the group that Mocha Noah Johnson formed a few years ago after the whole General Beauregard's incident that we all remember from about a year and a half ago. And so that goes to the county's attorney's office, and it'll be, I guess, interesting to see what happens with it because, you know, Mark Bell, the owner of 90s, is saying, well, he didn't know he had to post a sign, and he didn't know when the law took effect, and, you know, it's pretty clear he didn't have the sign up. So, I mean, that's not really in question. And it's been a little disheartening because, you know, a lot of the debate online, I wrote a story about this a couple of days ago, has kind of degenerated into, you know, whether it's okay to have saggy pants or not, which is totally beside the point.
That's not the question.
The issue is you got to post the dress code, and he didn't post it, so...
It's a pretty simple thing.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if they'd turn away, like, you know, a young co-ed wearing her fashionable palazzo pants.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, I wonder that, too. I mean, you know, one of the things that Mark told me he bans is black T-shirts, and I wear black T-shirts all the time, and I wonder if I tried to go in there with a black T-shirt, what they'd say to me. But.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there is some ambiguity in the ordinance because I don't think it really specifies what the signage looks like, but... You know, I don't think that it's an excuse to say that they didn't know when the ordinance went into effect. You know, I know Mark was present at many of those meetings where it was discussed, and his mother is a commissioner.
Yeah, he could have, if he really wanted to know, he could have just called his mom. But
it just seems like it's something that you would want to know if you are a bar owner downtown who's impacted by not having. I'm not following it.
Well, it took effect when it was passed. I mean, it took effect immediately upon the mayor signing it, which is the case with most ordinances. And the communication they received from the county attorney's office was written in the present tense, which would seem to indicate that this is something you should do now. But I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, so.
Well, no, it's a touchy issue when people feel like they are being singled out if they try to enter an establishment and just to spend money and relax and have fun.
Sure, yeah. I mean, and it's something I really feel like we have to deal with this because it's very hard to prove like an individual incident of discrimination, you know, what's really in somebody's head when they do something. But, you know, there are so many African-Americans, young African-Americans in the city who just don't feel welcome, especially downtown or... You know, university students who don't want to come here because of Athens' reputation, and we just need to fix that. You know, that it's really kind of a stain on our city.
It is. It's a real stigma, and it's a real shame. I mean, I have a good friend who's a high school teacher in Clayton County. He teaches upper level math, and you know, the best of the best. And he testifies. You know, he'll be like, "Oh, why don't you go to UGA? I went to UGA. Athens is a great town." And He says that, you know, a lot of his kids are like, oh, no, Athens isn't for us. No, UGA's not for us.
That's sad to hear.
It's a reputation that spreads beyond the students that are currently at UGA, and it's a shame. It's a real shame.
You know, I do know that there are efforts to increase minority enrollment at UGA, and it's different when you're on the campus as opposed to when you are doing what every college student in the world does and goes off campus to have fun downtown. So to not feel welcome downtown is a big chunk of a student's life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big chunk of your college experience.
Something is wrong here because I would Ole Miss. You know, and if, I mean, you want to talk about, you know, like racist history. I mean, come
right,
on, you know.
Right.
But when I was in school, almost 20 years ago, Ole Miss had a higher African American enrollment then than UGA does now, and I think it's up around 20% now, and UGA is about 8-9%.
Well, there's also the fact that UGA has one of the wealthiest student populations of any public university. There was a
they ain't got nothing on some of those Ole Miss kids, I'll tell you that.
Well, the New York Times published a piece a couple months ago, and I save it on my phone, and I shoot it to people all the time because the statistics are staggering. Apparently 60% of UGA students are from the top 20th percentile income bracket. So 60% of UGA students are from families that are making $130,000 a year or more.
That's a big chunk.
Yeah.
And then you compare them to the students who have to get, like, financial aid, take part and let the big dog eat. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a real discrepancy.
Yeah. Well,
because there are several students who who are like paying their way. You know?
Well, and no wonder these luxury student houses. I mean, I ask myself, how can there possibly be 3,000 or 5,000 students who can afford to pay $900 a bedroom? But apparently, there are
a bedroom.
Well, there's two things going on there, I think. You know, number one, there are these affluent school districts, you know, in Cobb County, North Fulton, whatever, that are just feeder schools for UGA. You know, and they, you know, are predominantly white. But the other thing I think is that there's a financial concern on the part of, you know, some bar owners and managers that, you know, these kind of wealthier Greek kids, you know, I'm obviously generalizing, stereotyping here, but, you know, that if you let in too many African Americans, then the kids with the real money aren't going to want to come into your bar.
And you know what? As long as those kids with the money are happy in that bar, I think they'll be fine, because there might not be a lot of intermingling once they are in the bar. I don't know how it is. I've never tried to get into some of these disputed places, so it's not my demographic.
I've gone out on the town. I had a handful of 20-something-year-old girlfriends take me out on the town a year or so ago, and it was an interesting experience because I've done my share of going out in the town back in the 90s. And it's a different climate now. It's a very much a different climate, and it's all focused on pouring as much liquor as possible down your throat. There are no pool tables, there are no dartboards, there's no video games, there's no band playing. There's bars lining either side of every venue where you're never more than arm's length from a red Solo cup full of liquor, and they're not drinking beer, they're drinking liquor. And it's pretty amazing. It's pretty staggering how the scene is, and it seems like the primary purpose is just, I mean, you're not sitting at a table talking with your friends. There aren't even any tables and chairs in most of these joints. You're not sitting over a pitcher of margaritas or a pitcher of beer.
That is different.
It's I think that standing is up, like it's like a feedlot kind of.
Before we go, because we're running a little low on time, I know you also wanted to mention that it's important for residents to speak up, or at least, submit some comments regarding T-SPLOS projects.
Yes. The T-SPLOS projects are currently, there's an online public comment for T-SPLOS, so you can go to AthensClarkCounty.com's website, and there is, T-SPLOS is on the homepage, and submit your comments. There's a long list of projects, road projects, as well as a good deal of bike and pedestrian greenway. It's really important that folks get their comments in. We're going to have to whittle them down and cut some funds, and there are differing forces with different priorities. So it's important that a broad swath of the community put their 2 cents in, because this thing also is going to a referendum, and it's going to have to pass public muster, the general public muster.
And the public's going to pay for it, so they might as mm-hmm. well have some input.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That will be the last word for today. I want to thank my panelists, Commissioner Melissa Link and Blake Odd with Flagpole. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station or Flagpole. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.